You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Dan, what'd you say the temperature was outside?
63.
It's 23 in here.
I saw you put your cardigan sweater on there.
Oh, we just both put sweatshirts on.
Cardigan, really?
Nice T Swift mention. I appreciate it.
Gonna put your scarf on too.
Got an email from
little hand muff.
From
whoa!
What'd you just say?
Whatever happened to the hand muff? We need to talk about that. That
I think
was
the
a
name
staple of Americana for decades, and then all of a sudden, what in the 30s or 40s? No, it would have been after the 40s, probably in the 50s.
Well, it went out of style. Yeah, people weren't dressing as fancy, but you know who still uses the hand muff?
Yeah, Mahomes.
Quarterbacks. That's right.
Well, they're not. They still sell hand muffs.
I have a heated electric pouch.
Can we get a new name?
And inside
What's
the pouch is a bar. Well, because the muff was furry. These are waterproof. Okay. And you put your hand inside. There's a bar inside, and the bar is heated, and there's an electronic component. It's all warm in there.
But, obviously, Scott and I are too childish to entertain this conversation.
You know they have started selling these commercially for golfers. And and you flip it around on your butt side when you're not using it. And you flip it around.
Bring around the front.
You know what? It's like
keep
a
your
it's like
warm.
A fanny pack.
Yeah.
It's like a fanny pack for your hands. Put your hands in there and it's all toasty.
We could call it a hand muff.
Yes.
Okay.
It's perfect for Chiefs games. Oh, my God. I love that thing.
Just going to sit this one out. You guys just keep talking amongst yourselves.
Okay.
I do
love there's a lot of people who don't have pockets. We typically wear pants and shorts, et cetera, that have pockets. Many women wear things that don't have pockets. And so having a hand muff was part of a fashion, you know, and a place to put your hands to keep them warm.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dan.
I do love the electric hand warmers. Those things are awesome.
I have two sets. They're shaped like a computer mouse.
Yeah.
I have two sets of those for
Super
Chiefs games. And then
which means you have four?
Yeah. Well, you can't warm up your left hand, not your right hand.
You said you have two sets.
Yeah, they come in pairs.
So you have four.
Guess what? You have hands. There's two of them.
Okay. Do you have four hands?
No.
You did just say you have two sets.
I have two sets of two. Four.
So why
do you have four?
Well, because I buy things in pairs so the kids can have a pair if we go to the Chiefs game or whatever.
They have pockets.
No. Do you not remember the Chiefs game last year where they had to remove the man's nipples because they froze off his body?
I don't think it was just his nipples.
People went out and drank and acted a fool.
Oh, but that game was so much fun.
I took the hand warmers. You better believe I took those hand warmers.
I wouldn't have gone. If I had tickets to that game, I wouldn't have gone.
Fourth coldest playoff game of all time.
Hang on, I got two ears, but I can only hear one voice at a time.
No, but oddly, you have two hands, and I have four hand warmers. How does that not make sense to you?
You don't make sense to me. I mean, I have two hands. I only need one set of hand warmers.
When was the last time you went to a Chiefs game completely by yourself? Because that would be weird.
I don't feel responsible for ensuring the warmth of my guest. You're an adult. Dress yourself.
A muff in good condition.
A what?
A muff in good condition can go for strangely high prices.
That's true.
All right.
Internet shop, maybe.
I have confirmed with police is an update to a story that we covered in the 3 o'clock hour before this show completely went off the rails, that police have taken a report on the incident in Tonganoxie involving what appears to be a child roaming around with either a real or fake knife, wearing a box on his head, scaring the daylights out of everyone. They thanked us for our coverage, said they would keep us posted. They are looking into it. They are aware of the reports. Mm. They don't know yet if a crime was committed.
Okay. Interesting.
I said, please let us know when you figure that out. We will let everyone know. Either way, if that was my kid, I would be furious.
There aren't enough wooden spoons to break on their bottom.
Pretty sure you can't spank anymore with an instrument.
Well, what the cops don't know, the cops don't know.
Oh, my gosh. You did not just say that.
You certainly can't do it with a closed fist.
Wow. Thank you, Sam.
As long as we're naming things we can't do anymore.
Wow.
Not that I want to.
You said instruments, like a trombone.
Yes.
A story here from CBS News. It has been decades since
the trombone.
Since Australia's thylacine aka the Tasmanian devil, was declared extinct, but scientists say they have made a breakthrough as they research ways to bring back the Tasmanian tiger.
Read the first sentence again, please.
It has been decades since Australia's thylacine, and I said Tasmanian devil. I meant to say Tasmanian tiger.
What does thylacine, what does that mean?
That's the actual name of the animal.
Spell it.
T-H-Y-L-A-C-I-N-E.
Thylacine, yep.
Go back and play that. That sounded like you said Australia's thylacine, meaning there's some pop culture thing in Australia where they don't have thighs.
Tell me more about the show going off the rails earlier, because it continues.
Say it again.
Thylacine.
No, that's not how you said it. You said Australia's thylacine. And I thought,
literally,
the Sam Hill are you talking about?
She's the enunciation police.
Sam?
You have become the enunciation police.
Thank you, Sam.
She corrected me earlier. What is a thylacine?
She corrected me yesterday because I said porter potty.
Those Australians do not like thighs.
You have become a little stringent on enunciation. Thylacine.
Yes, thylacine.
Play it again. Thylacine.
Thylacine.
Oh, thylacine. I mispronounced
it. I would not have known how to pronounce that. I'm just saying, as you were reading it, there was a reason. I said, what did you just say? Continue on.
Now,
I'm not going to.
I did go back and notice
you read now.
That you Sam? Were still talking about something else when he said thylacine, which might be why you didn't.
Are you trying to say to me you have heard the term thylacine or
thylacine?
Yes, it sounds like you're saying in Australia.
Thylacine.
There's a thylacine.
I had never used the word before.
Nor have I. Thus, I asked you because I thought if I'm confused, you know, everyone in their cars are going, did he just say Australia has a thylacine?
Can I move on in the story?
I'm going to hit the brakes.
It would be
Dan,
odd.
Dan, yeah. I'm going to hit the brakes. Everybody,
the producer.
Back to your corners. The train is back on the tracks.
Is
thylacine.
It? Thylacine.
Okay.
Can I continue?
Yes.
Does anybody want me to now?
I would love, for the love of God, start reading the story.
It has been decades since Australia lost its thylacine. Thylacine. But women want their thighs back.
I would.
Known as the Tasmanian tiger, it was declared extinct, and scientists say they've made a breakthrough as they research ways to bring back the animal. Colossal Biosciences, in a press release late last week, said it reconstructed thylacine genome in about 99.9% complete, with 45 gaps that they say will work. They will work to close through additional sequencing in the coming months.
Okay.
Can we stop trying to bring things back to life that have gone extinct?
This is Jurassic Park.
There's an entire series of movies about this, and it didn't work out.
By the way, the Tasmanian devil does not look like it looks in the cartoons in real life.
Well, that's a Tasmanian tiger. The Tasmanian devil, I think, might be something different.
It is a different animal.
Do they have thighs?
No, nobody in Australia does. Thylacine. Australia gave up its thighs years and years ago. Nobody needed them anymore.
Quite the scene.
It's strong.
Yeah. Oh my God. What is happening?
They literally.
You ever go down under?
They just have.
Whoa.
They go thylas.
All right.
Quite a scene.
Dana Wright.
What a scene.
I'm trying to inform.
You were trying to pronounce something that no one in the world has ever heard of, except maybe our one listener from Australia.
Thylas scene.
Scene.
They have short, stubby legs over there.
We're going to come back. We're going to...
Because they don't have thighs. They just starts at the knee.
We're going to talk about Prairie Village.
We're going to focus.
Poor Sam.
They are not allowed to have Airbnbs anymore.
They're airless, B&B-less scene.
All right. I can't anymore with you guys. We shared yesterday with you the one from Channel 5. This one's from Fox 4. Came up right at the very tail end of the show, so we didn't get to talk about it. And would love to talk with you guys about this. After months of back and forth, the Prairie Village City Council voted to ban short-term rentals in the city on Monday night. This includes properties like Airbnb and VRBO. The vote passed 10-2 Monday night after a lot of public feedback from people on both sides. Several other cities across the metro have also talked about what to do with the growing trend of short-term rentals in residential neighborhoods. During Monday's meeting, city council members heard from some residents who are concerned about safety, some who think these rental new properties are a nuisance. This 10-2 vote bans short-term rental stays of less than 30 days.
I'm going to stop you right there because that's important. They are basically saying you have to have enough money to come and stay and rent in Prairie Village for 30 days.
31.
Or you are in violation of the law.
That is correct.
But I would ask why 31 days, full well knowing with the World Cup coming, so many people are readying their homes for rentals for 3 weeks. Why 31 days? Because you're not going to get, if they're trying to keep out the riffraff of the weekend bachelor party, you can still accomplish that by forcing it to be rented 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
What I think Prairie Village, for the most part, is saying is we don't want short-term rentals in the city, period. We want them out. If you live here, you either rent that house and you live in it, or you own the house outright.
I understand, but I still think they could have made a carve out for 2 to 3 weeks, which would have helped homeowners who have Airbnbs rent that sucker out for March Madness.
How long does the World Cup go on?
3 weeks.
3 weeks.
I mean, I could see a lot of people who obviously have extra income
who
from
are
overseas.
Ticked off.
No, who are more than willing to pay for the full month.
No, the homeowners, Sam, are ticked off.
I don't think rich people are going to be ticked off. Because rich people don't Airbnb.
Yeah, it's the rich people that they're don't want the Airbnbs in there.
They're going to stay in nice hotels on the plaza.
From Channel 41. By November 2025, short-term rentals will not exist in Prairie Village neighborhoods. There's going to be a 30-day minimum.
So you have a year.
Yep. Owners must now figure out what to do with their properties. They talked to a guy named Johnny Youssef, who owns an Airbnb in PV. He is also a host for his parents' home in Prairie Village, which has not been on Airbnb quite yet a full year. A few months ago, he said he talked to the city before his parents bought and listed the home. Now I'm telling mom and dad, hey guys, sorry, you know how I told you to spend tens of thousands of dollars fixing up the pool to fix the house and exterior so we could rent it out? We don't know if this property is now going to continue to bring finances or even cover its own cost.
By the way, the fine, if you rent your home starting a year from next month, the penalty is $500. You could still do it. If you have a nice place in Prairie Village, you're not... See, the penalty is not a deterrent. Anyone who violates the new ordinance faces a fine of $500. If I'm renting out my Airbnb for 2 weeks.
A McMansion, by the way.
Well, not all, but I mean, they have some homes in Prairie Village that are relatively small, all things considered. But, you know, they have a lot of nice homes. If I'm renting out my Airbnb for 2 weeks, 3 weeks during the World Cup,
okay,
I'm charging more than $500.
You're well saying over. Just pay the fine.
Yeah.
Is it per day?
Exactly.
Are you sure it's not per
it
day?
Just says, it says anyone who violates the ordinance faces a fine of $500.
Prairie Village's decision, by the way, did not include grandfathering in people who already have the short-term rental. And so I do feel bad for owner Johnny, who said, look, we talked to the city about this. We bought a property specifically to rent it out in this next year. We made improvements to that property that otherwise we would not have made. And now they're saying, meh.
Well, but there are plenty of instances. I can think of one right off the top of my head where... there was a reason, like I buy this nice house in Western Shawnee. It's right down the street from a library and right next to some schools. And this vacant, empty piece of land not far from where I live is zoned single family residential. Okay. Well, it's been rezoned for apartments. Or let me rephrase, it's being considered for rezoning for apartments. Not that I have anything against apartments, but... Single-family housing is going to do more for my property values than a new apartment complex, which is a lot more traffic, usually a younger clientele.
Sure.
And so But I bought this house thinking that was going to be single family residential.
I'm going to be honest. I'm completely hypocritical. And I think a lot of people are when you have this conversation about the Airbnb. Because when you go on vacation, you want one, but you don't want one next door to you.
Oh,
and you can't have it both ways.
You're damn right.
And I'm acknowledging that.
Yeah, I've never stayed in an Airbnb, and I probably never would.
I stay in an Airbnb every single time I go down to visit my mom and dad.
Another great point. They will tack on fees to your Airbnb for, quote, cleaning. $500 cleaning fee.
Okay, a number of people in the text line are saying it is a $500 per day fine.
Then see, we're making sense.
Now, the Fox 4 story did not indicate that. And so if it's $500 a day, that is a deterrent.
That is a fat cost prohibitive deterrent. And you know how you'll get caught. It's not going to be them looking on the Airbnb website. Your neighbors will rat you out.
Oh, absolutely.
100%.
They certainly will. And that would be a $15,000 fine for a month.
I mean, this is a massive entitlement, not in my backyard thing. Would you like to guess how many hotels exist in Prairie Village?
Zero. So?
It's not.
If you don't have enough money to buy a house, get out.
It's.
No.
No. I love Prairie Village. I lived there 2 years. I absolutely loved it. It's not. It wasn't zoned or designed for like
businesses other than the Corinth.
And that's always mom and pop shops, which is part of the charm. I get it. I wouldn't want to live next door to an Airbnb.
I don't want to live next door to an Airbnb. I would be furious. And Sam, that's not, you know. I want to know who my neighbors are. And I know you're going to try to, with respect, spin this as some sort of, you know, you older hoity-toity people. But I bought my house in a quiet, comfortable neighborhood, wanting to live in a quiet, comfortable neighborhood, not wondering who my neighbors are going to be from weekend to weekend. They don't have any investment in that neighborhood.
But could you not say the same thing in certain cases about rentals? If the home next to you is put on the market as a rental, most people go, oh, God, it's a rent, you know, and that's not fair either.
I understand because we have to have a rental market. Yes. No doubt about that. But if you want to rent your home, you know, I'm not going to be thrilled about it. I'd prefer you sell it to somebody who has a little bit more invested in the upkeep and the yard and everything else, presumably and hopefully. But what I don't want is a new neighbor every Saturday and Sunday.
I agree.
52. I don't want 52 neighbors in 1 year because you're trying to make a fast buck. And by the way, speaking of rich, it's the people who buy these big ass houses and Airbnb them for astronomical prices, much more than the mortgage or the rent would ever be on that house. Those are the people who are cleaning up. 913-586-7798. 586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. Sam, I want to read this one text because I think a couple of people have some venture capitalists. Thank you. Some younger listeners are writing in, and they bring up some really good points. Good for Prairie Village. Venture capitalists and others have purchased homes right out from under families just for profit, and it's wrong. Another writes, and
it's
I
wrong,
think
wrong, but it's not illegal.
Yeah, well, that's true. Can we stop turning residential homes into money-making schemes? This is why my generation is never going to own a home unless we make tons of money.
I would agree with both of those points.
Mm-hmm. No, and for people in your generation, sorry to interrupt, Dana. For people in your generation, Sam, I would argue that has to be a real fear that prices are getting too high too quickly, and it's putting home ownership, which is part of the American dream, out of your reach.
I guess they already have.
When I think, Sam, about the Airbnb in Prairie Village, I'm thinking in different terms. I'm thinking we're going to do this for a few weeks and be done and make a few thousand dollars. I'm not thinking about a venture capitalist coming in, buying the property, and then trying to rent it out every single weekend. I don't think the market exists in a Prairie Village to have a house rented out every single weekend outside of an event like the World Cup or the Big 12 tournament. And so, and I know you can't like decide which it's going to be, but if I don't have a problem with someone renting it out 2 or 3 weeks out of the year, I wish they had said you get 3 weeks a year to rent out your property. Use those days however you want. you cannot rent it out 300 days of the year.
And I do stand corrected. At 95th and Knoll, there is the Meadowbrook Inn. You can get a room there for $300 a night. It is stunning. It is brand new.
It's over by Verbena's. I love that place.
$300. And I thought that that was in Overland Park, but it's actually Prairie Village.
Okay. We have two Anns. We'll start with the first one, Ann, and that was the Ann in
Anna
Olathe.
One, Anna two.
Oh, my God.
Anna one.
Hello. Go ahead.
Hello, this is Ann.
Yep. Yes. Hi, Ann. Go ahead.
Okay. So I'm in Olathe, and our subdivision, it's a pretty, I mean, I wouldn't say we're above state. We're not like Cedar Creek, but we have pretty, pretty good homes. Anyway, we have found that corporations are coming in and purchasing houses for sale, and then they're turning around and renting them to employees that are moving to here to work for them on long-term or short-term basis. Mm-hmm. What we're finding, though, is that they're not upkeeping the yards. They're not upkeeping the homes. And so now we are getting petitions so that we can put into the bylaws that we will not allow corporations to purchase homes within our neighborhood.
Can you say that in a neighborhood bylaw, Ann? By law, can you say that?
Yes, we can. We've checked with, we have a very good board.
Yeah.
And they are working with an attorney. And yes, you can put that in the bylaws of a home association.
I wouldn't be one bit surprised because I think the only wording you would need is you could not discriminate against an individual based on the federally protected classes, but a corporation doesn't fall under federally protected classes. Now, if the CEO had really deep pockets,
yeah,
and he wanted to buy up six homes in a certain neighborhood, I don't know that you could say no to that.
They're doing that up and down every street in Prairie Village. And here's, you know this, they're buying the house cash, knocking it down,
and then building
a very thin two and a half story straight up into the air right next to the next one that's straight up into the air.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say everybody's fine with it, but go down Belinder.
Oh, I've seen it.
Every house is brand new and $1.5 million now. And they've replaced the little cute bungalows, the little cottages and the ranches that Prairie Village was known for. And, mm-hmm. and one of the things I want to ask Sam is, would you have a problem with saying you can rent out your property 3 weeks a year? Because then that gets rid of the slumlord that's just buying it, pricing everybody else out, and renting it out every single weekend, which, again, I don't think that market exists in Prairie Village for that. Why not say you get 3 weeks a year? That covers the Big 12 tournament. It covers some of the World Cup. And maybe
NFL playoffs.
Yeah, you want to have some relatives come in from California. Like, that's fine. But outside of that, you have to live there.
This is a tough issue for me because I do balk at the idea of my city telling me what I can and cannot do. Obviously, there's lines and rules, but taking it one step further and saying I'm not allowed to Airbnb it. But I also strongly agree with the text that Scott read saying that this is stopping the outside companies from coming in and buying up all the properties and making them unaffordable to people who need single family housing.
But Sam, I would counter your remark with simply this. When people are looking to invest their hard-earned money, whether it's you or whether it's, you know, Joe Blow and then the white car that just drove by out there on the ramp, there is zoning in a city for a reason. Because you want to know that what I'm buying into is going to stay that way. I'm buying into a residential neighborhood, which means it's zoned single-family home. That means that somebody, if I buy a house and let's just say I spend $400,000 on a house, okay? That means because it's been zoned single family residential, somebody can't come into the house next door to me, rip it to the ground, and put in a gas station.
Well, I would agree with that. However, if I, and I, you know, I've had to face the fact that I'll probably never be able to afford a home in Prairie Village, but if one day I could afford a home in Prairie Village and I purchased one, and then I had enough money to buy another nicer home somewhere else in a nicer neighborhood, and I moved into that home, I do believe that I should have the right, as the person who has owned that home for however many years, paid taxes on it, the whole nine, to Airbnb it if I so choose.
Well, but your rights only extend so far as they don't infringe on mine.
And how is me Airbnb-ing it infringing on the rights of those
because
around me?
Because you're lowering my property values.
Well, because you've turned now a single-family home into a business.
That's right.
Well, Well, if I work from home, it's a business.
That's splitting hairs.
I think that. There's a room in your home that is a business, yes, but your home is not a business. It's not a money-making operation.
So then what is the solution so that you allow for a homeowner within reason to rent out their property? Let's say, again, it's 3 or 4 weeks, but then you disallow the corporations from coming in and buying up the properties and driving up. I don't know how you have both.
There are a couple problems with the scenario that you just mentioned, though, and not with what you said, but If I'm a good lawyer, I'm going to pick apart what you just said. 2 to 3 weeks. Okay. Do they have to be 7 continuous days? Right. Or can I rack up 21 days of weekends?
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Great point.
And so now for half, little less than half of the year, the home next door to me is rented out every single weekend.
And we are right back to square one. Mm-hmm. You're right.
Isn't this the same city that was passing out signs to all of their residents about being an inclusive city?
Man.
I'll turn my mic off.
Jeez Louise.
The hatred for PV. I love that town, Sam.
But
I love it too. I think it's wonderful. But I love going to Corinth.
But Sam, enjoy your youth. Okay. If I were to give you any advice, it would be if you have dreams of living in Prairie Village or Leawood or you know, Lee Summit in a nice place out there. Nobody moves into that house on their first home buy. You have to invest to work up to that house through, you know, for example, years and years ago, I bought my home in Roland Park. I got it for a steal for $130,000. I did not sell it for $130,000. And that allowed me to afford and be able to afford a sizable down payment on a much bigger house. And that's how I did it. And that's what every young person has to do, unless your last name is, well, I'm not going to use politicians.
Yes.
Hall, for example, or Hunt.
And even then, you know this, your last name could be Buffett, and Warren could be like, yeah, not feeling it. Not getting any money from me.
Warren Buffett has actually said he's leaving his children very little.
Can you imagine? Like, if you're like this third cousin, you're just like,
third cousin, you're not getting a dime. Anne in Overland Park, hello.
Hi. I have found ourselves living next to an Airbnb. We've been in our home for decades, and the homeowner next to us left her home and turned it into an Airbnb without even telling us.
Ooh.
And initially, we were furious, but it has not been awful. And the reason why, I think, is because they're looking for good reviews on this. They are taking care of the place. They do have the lawn taken care of. We've been lucky in that regard. And one of the reasons I don't hate it being an Airbnb, if the owner is not going to live there, I mean, I'm not talking venture capitalist. This was a homeowner that was. And if she is going to rent it out, or he, she, whatever, going to rent it out, I would rather it be the way it is now than have a long-term renter in there that may not take care of it, may not mow the lawn, or whatever.
Hmm.
That being said, even though it hasn't been awful because it has been maintained and I know they're working for, you know, their reviews, I also have 2 adult kids that are trying to become first-time homeowners and they can't do it.
Yeah. So you see both sides.
I absolutely see both sides. And like Dana, I stay in Airbnbs when I go somewhere. The first time I stayed in an Airbnb was the last time I stayed in a hotel.
Me too.
Wow.
I hate to say it, Scott. And I hate to say it.
Great call.
If you did it, you'd never go back. Everybody gets a room. You're all in one living room at the end of the night. We just did this in Manhattan. We played board games and watched The Breakfast Club and played poker. Everyone is in the same space, and then we brought food in, but there's a kitchen you can cook. Like, it's just better.
And where did the stigma come from that all short-term renters are just a bunch of frat bros trying to throw a party?
Well, it didn't help with the scenario down in Overland Park, beautiful 6-bedroom home where a guy from Topeka was killed.
Yeah.
That didn't help. And neighbors afterwards saying, oh, yeah,
it's been a mess.
It's party time every weekend over here.
And was
Dana
that
doesn't have a frat party every time she goes
right,
to Airbnb.
Correct. Was that owner, though, was that owner, Scott,
nice.
Absentee from out of state? I believe he was.
I believe it was an out-of-state owner, yes. 913-586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. grab one more, and then we'll wrap up the show with a couple of other stories we wanted to bring to your attention today. John in Lee's Summit. John, hello.
How are you doing?
We're doing well. Thank you for asking, my friend.
I think there's a lot of misconceptions about Airbnbs, about who's staying in them and how long. There are houses in Kansas City that are booked well over 300 nights a year. We're talking traveling nurses, traveling executives, people that are moving from out of town. So it's not just the weekend parties that we hear about in the news. And then a lot of that falls back on the management companies. So you were talking about property values. The management companies, their Airbnbs are based on a rating system, and there's an algorithm within Airbnb. So the higher the ratings you have, the more often your property is going to show up to people when it meets their criteria. So it behooves them to have the nicest house, to have the nicest furnishings, to have the nice lawn, well cleaned. And I know management companies here in Kansas City that deal strictly with Airbnbs. They reach out to the neighbors. They let them know what's going on. They give them their cell phone and say, if you notice a problem, you call me 24/7, day or night. And because that, they live on that rating. Now, there's also management companies that are in it for the quick buck, and they don't care. They won't vet their customers, and they'll have the parties that annoy the neighbors, and that's what, unfortunately, that's all we hear about in the news.
And see, with my luck, that's who's going to take over the house next door
yes.
to me.
And homeowners have the right to say, John, I don't want any of it because I can't control who's next door. But I would also argue you can't control who your neighbors are. I would rather have a very nice Airbnb renter next door than like the son of Satan.
Correct.
Satan doesn't
have his brother. You know, those owners that are getting the bad reviews and allowing the parties, not vetting their customers, yeah. they're not going to make it. I mean, we're a free market economy. They are going to fall by the wayside. Unfortunately, it might take a little bit of time for that to happen.
John, thank you for the call. Really appreciate talking to you, man.
Hey, one last thing.
Uh-huh.
As far as, like, you know, corporations, and we kind of think that that's an evil stigma, that's just a smart legal scenario for the owner, the investor that owns the house. It protects them legally, and as far as, you know, taxes and everything, it's just smart to roll that into an Airbnb, or I'm sorry, an LLC, or, you know, whatever. So, you know, these might not be some huge venture capital groups. You know, this might be an investor in California that owns a house in Kansas City, a house in Florida. Maybe he's only got 2-3 houses, but he's got them into an LLC. So from the outside, somebody looking in, they assume it's, you know, some evil ex-corporation, and it just might be a retiree, and he bought some houses, and it's an investment for, you know, some income.
Okay. John, do appreciate the call, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. You know, why don't we ever call Satan Beelzebub, which is another one of his names?
Because Satan's a lot easier to say.
I know, that's true.
I just don't want to live next to a jerk.
Exactly.
And but what you know what I'm saying? Like, what would be worse, one bad Airbnb renter out of 20 a year, or you're stuck living next to someone who makes your life miserable?
And it's the devil you know versus the devil you don't. If we're going to stay with the theme,
it was the devil's son.
The devil's son that you know versus the devil's son that you don't know. I hear what you guys are saying.
Who's the devil's wife?
He didn't have one. He was very promiscuous.
Very single, Sam.
Says so in the Bible.
Very, very.
Oh, it
single.
Did.
No.
Promiscuous boy?
No, it did not. Justin Bieber is reportedly considering taking legal action against his former business managers for mismanaging his money. The singer has been livid for years because he believes he's lost upwards of $300 million to his managers.
How does that even happen? Although it happened to Billy Joel, didn't it?
Was
his brother-in-law.
Though it is unclear exactly how much money Bieber, who is now 30, believes has been squandered, insiders are telling the New York Post that he's been discussing the possibility of suing those responsible. He already sold his music catalog for $200
million. What do you mean discussing the possibility of suing? I'd be suing.
We got to run.
Remember Dane Cook?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Bonus hour is coming up next. Don't forget our podcast anytime you want. On behalf of our producer today, the finest man in these United States, the great Sam Stevie III, my good friend and co-host Dana Wright, my name is Scott Parks, and God willing, back tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Have a great night. Be safe. Be well. And be good to one another. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime. at KMBZ.com.